Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining me today. This is Hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will become. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. And as if that's not enough of a struggle, it then has to struggle in order for its wings to be strong enough for it to fly. So while none of that is easy, it certainly is not easy busting through limits that society places upon us. And today I am excited to bring back my friend Courtney, who was with me almost exactly 2 years ago. I looked up the date. She was with me August the 5th of 2020, and it's August the 2nd of 2022. We have both grown a lot since that time. Our businesses have grown and matured like the butterfly. And when she was with us last time, we talked very specifically about her. And so I'm going to try to remember to put the link to her last episode in so that you can learn more about her. But today she's going to talk to us more about her family situation. As you can see, she's an IEP coach. She's got a beautiful logo in the back there with the butterfly, which, of course, I absolutely love. And she's going to talk to us a lot about AAC. And she's going to tell us what that is and why we want it and why we wouldn't want it and just all those wonderful things. So, Courtney, hi. Welcome. How are you?
Hi. I'm so excited to be here. So a little bit about me. I work as an SLPA, which is a speech language pathology assistant here in Arizona. And I actually started that career kind of by accident by taking college courses on communication because my daughter was born with a disability. And at the time, I was really seeking information on how to help her learn to talk. That's what originally that was my goal. Like a lot of parents, obviously she wasn't babbling and talking. And so that was a top concern. And so I started looking into taking American Sign Language. And then my husband's like, oh, they actually have these courses that you can take on communication. And so I started taking those. And then halfway through that, he goes, do you know you could actually get a certificate in this? It's a really desperate need in the community for SLPAs and SLPs. And so I said, oh, that sounds cool. And I always joke that my goal at the time was to work part-time, be home with my two kids at the time, and I could get the college credits, and so I could get financial aid and stuff. And so, and then by the end, I became an SLPA and changed careers. So it was a happy accident, and I tell people it was the best thing I ever did for my daughter and then for all the wonderful clients that I get to work with. And so one of the almost all my clients have augmentative and alternative communication, which is AAC. And so I really started learning about it for them and for my own daughter. And so Hannah's 18 and is non-speaking, and her primary modes of communication are gestures, adaptive sign, and then her communication device. So
it's crazy that she is 18 already.
Yeah, it
doesn't seem possible.
I know. When they say it goes by in a blink of an eye, I know we don't believe it, the late nights and early mornings, but it really does. It goes by so fast.
Yeah. So tell us more about the AAC devices. Some of the things that surround the, like some of the myths and like do some little myth busting right now.
Yeah. So being that we're both IEP coaches, I do want to touch on that your school district can do communication augmentative and alternative communication evaluations. I will say that not all SLPs, even though it falls in their scope, don't necessarily have experience with it. But I do want to note for our listeners that you can get that through the school and they can provide it. And that would fall under the augmentative, but assistive technology. So all the A's and acronyms, just like tongue-tied too. But it can be done through assistive technology evaluation, and that falls under there. So it can happen through that, your private insurance, through Medicaid grants, and through also just nonprofits. A lot of those are doing that too to help people get evaluations for the devices. So there's a lots of different options. Some come on iPad, some come on Samsung. New app developers are out there every day, so there's some common ones that are there. But the most important thing for parents to realize is there's options. So that's important. You know, it's not a one size fits all. And each of the different apps that go onto the tablet, and some come on their own too, not on a tablet. They're individual. But each one has different features that are important depending on your child's needs. So that's why it's important to get with somebody who, an SLP, an OT, who has experience and knows the different features. For instance, my daughter's on a Nova Chat, and that's because the boxes, the buttons, can highlight red for her visual impairments, and it has a delay, so she's allowed to swipe across all the buttons, and none of them select until she lifts her finger. So that's super important because with her spastic movements, sometimes she was hitting buttons she didn't mean to, and then it would bump her all the way back to the homepage and she'd have to start over. So looking at those features, and so one myth is you don't have to have finger isolation. You don't have to be, your child does not have to be able to isolate their finger like this. There is switches that you can look like little buttons that you hit. There's ones that they can activate with their head, and there's even some that they can activate with their eyes. And I have a client who is wicked smart and he uses eye gaze. He creates jokes and writes papers. He does games. They've modified the controller, so he plays video games. And so it's super important that nobody tells you that that finger isolation or that access is saying they can't do it because they don't have this ability to isolate their finger. That's an old myth. There's so much adaptive technology out there that's absolutely not necessary to do. Yeah,
so I'm gonna make you pause for a second, take a breath.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you brought up the IEP because I believe it's a federal regulation. And I'm hoping that since you're in one state and I'm in a different state that we can sort of verify this, because if it's in both of our IEPs, it's very likely that it definitely is a federal regulation. In the IEPs in Illinois, it says on the IEP that there has to be a discussion about assistive technology and determine whether or not an assistive technology or AT evaluation is necessary. Is that the same way in Arizona? Is it federal? Okay.
Yeah. It's federal. But what I find is sometimes that box gets checked, but it doesn't actually, it's kind of like assumed that there's not going to be anything. And I have seen so many IEPs, whether their child has communication delays or not, where there are many different apps and different slant boards. I mean, because assistive technology is a pencil grip, slant board, it could be a talk to text, something on your computer, could be typing instead of writing. And so when I look at these kiddos who have all these significant delays and gaps, we're looking at how can we fill in those to help them access their education, underline that, write that down, because it's really about what do they need to access their education. Once we determine that, then we have to look at, okay, what are the things that we have, or what are the things we need to bring into the IEP or in maybe even into the school district? Maybe they've never had it before. Doesn't mean your child doesn't need it. It just means they haven't brought it into the school. And so a discussion and then an evaluation. And the tricky part with the evaluation is, and in other aspects like speech therapy and occupational therapy, it's very clear this is a licensed person. This is what they do, and part of what they do is do this specific evaluation. With assistive technology, it's not usually one person. It can be, but usually it's a team and possibly an occupational therapist, a speech therapist, even a PT, or sometimes they contract out and have an assistive technology specialist that they bring in when they need a consult or an evaluation, because there's not that law that says you have to hold this degree to do this because it's pretty wide range of needs. So we've asked for that at an IEP meeting, and everybody looked at each other and they're like, we've never had a parent ask for assistive technology evaluation, because usually it's just a short discussion. So knowing that you can ask for that, knowing that it is within your rights to ask for that, and that there needs to be a good faith effort in seeing that through for your child.
Yeah. And the IEPs that I've seen, it says that there needs to be a statement written. And it's often, like you said, where, you know, the box gets checked, like, oh yeah, we had this discussion. And I'm looking at the IEP afterwards, and I ask the parent, well, what was this discussion? And they have no recollection of the discussion at all, because it's either sort of like, oh, okay, you know, we've talked about everything and nothing has come up. So that was the discussion.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, that's not a discussion.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's really important. And that's something that parents can do ahead of their IEP meeting, is email. If your child has multiple teachers or multiple providers, say, hey, I'm wondering, these are some of the needs I'm seeing at home. And I'm wondering, have you seen the same needs at school? And would that fall under assistive technology? And I tell parents all the time, the way that the climate is right now, in my opinion, parents need to make sure they're starting the conversations. It shouldn't be our burden. But what I'm finding is when we start the conversation, then the school personnel feel like they can participate in the conversation. But if they were to bring it up and cost the district money, even though that's totally illegal, it's like frowned upon. But if the parents bring it up and they're saying, yeah, we're agreeing with mom or dad, this is totally needed, then they can say, well, it was brought up at the IEP meeting and there was things we couldn't ignore. So now we're going to go ahead and do that. Whereas if the parents don't bring it up, I don't know. Have you felt that with your clients? I feel like it's always like, if the parents bring it up, then the doors are open. If the parents don't bring it up, then the kind of messaging, either directly or indirectly, is don't bring it up. That's going to cost us money. So.
Yeah, well, and absolutely. And then the law says, like, things like doctor evaluations, or if the teachers say, you know, hey, your child should be on medicine, or your child needs medicine, those are definitely things that the school will then be on the hook to pay for, because that's how the law is written, that you can't just say those things and then not pay for them because you're insisting that they happen. And yeah, as a teacher, we definitely, like you said, it was kind of an unwritten rule that you didn't bring stuff up, because it's almost like trickery in, like, if you say it a certain way, then you're okay. But if you say it this way, then you've cost the school money because you've said it wrong. And so it was just like, we'd rather you not say it at all than risk it being said to where we now have to pay for it. And so, yeah, it was just like, we don't bring it up. And since assistive technology, I have a difficult time getting schools to understand that there is the very minimal level of assistive technology, like the pencil grip, like the slant board, like I don't know. I mean, those are the two big things that I remember my students needing, and students that I have, that are my clients' kids now, that I worked with. And the schools are like, oh, that's not assistive technology. I'm like, but it is.
Actually,
like you said, anything to help them access their education.
And when you Google, what is assistive technology? Actually, Google tells us that it's anything from a pencil grip. Not that Google's the law, but I'm just saying, I think it's ironic because you can literally Google it and find that out. So that's really important. Another big myth is that feeling, and I've even had some therapists still kind of have this thinking or their mindset, that introducing a communication device will alter or prevent a child from developing verbal language. And I've always told my clients, whether they're my speech clients or my IEP clients, nothing is easier than just speaking. If your child can do it, they will. But what we don't know is how long it might take until their speech is intelligible. Or in my daughter's case, I waited a long time. First of all, it was early 2000, mid 2000s, just not what it is today with assistive technology being so affordable. I say that loosely because it's still expensive, but less expensive than it was, so many more options. So it wasn't really something that I learned about until she was around kindergarten, and there was just these crazy, ginormous communication devices. But I was so focused on her learning to talk and wanting her to talk. Obviously, my heart was just to communicate with her. So it took me a little bit to maybe even come to terms with that might not be our journey, you know. And to this day, if I had waited for her to talk, we would have no communication, because Hannah, with her her cerebellum and other things that are going on in her brain, the way her brain developed, she's not able to talk or even do sound imitation, word approximation, like, oh, that's the word she's trying to say. So we really would have been with no resource of communicating with her if I had just dug my heels and like, I'm not going to do this. And the data, the research shows that it absolutely does not delay them. In fact, the research says that it helps them. And I have one client who is autistic, and her speech was very unintelligible. And when we introduced the communication device, her vocabulary increased. Her spelling and reading. And now my little smarty pants, she's over here. She'll be reading. She doesn't know the word. And during our session, she went to her device, typed in the letters, she matched them because that's the skill she has learned, and then she touched the box up top for it to read her the message, and then she goes, oh, you know, I can't remember what word it was, and then she read it, and then she did it a couple more times, and it was a repetitive word, and by the end of the book, she knew that word. And I told her mom this, and she's like, oh my gosh. And I'm like, and that's what the device to be out all day. It needs to be integrated into their learning. The yes. kids with devices should be being taught to read. They should be taught all the literacy components. It's really important. And this is something that she just kind of started doing. And then, of course, her mom and I were fostering that and encouraging her. And her mom lets me, you know, share her story. But it's really cool to see that. And she has skyrocketed with her vocabulary, both reading and speaking. And so it's really important that we see it as a tool. And that kind of leads me to a second myth too, Shelly, that it just because a child can talk or has some verbal language, it doesn't mean they shouldn't qualify for a device. Because especially with my clients who have autism, when they're high sensory need or maybe stemming social situations, their words, the ones that can express it to me, they tell me it's like it gets stuck and they can't get it out. And those are the times that I see them reach for their device to clarify, or maybe because they don't feel like they can talk in that social situation. Right. And then they speak through their device and they give their message and they participate until their body feels calm again. And then they can go back to it. So it's not all or nothing. It doesn't have to be only using the communication device. It doesn't mean you can't qualify for one just because you have some words. So that's really important too.
And a communication device, when we talk about this, and you mentioned this a little bit before, it can be an app on an iPad, it can be its own separate device, or it can be still the old school. And when you mentioned, you know, that, you know, maybe when they're in one of those areas where they're just, you know, they can't communicate for whatever reason, it could just be a board.
Yeah. I had it ready.
Awesome.
And this is a blown up one. But you can print these. These are really good for, you can print them and laminate them. They're good for, especially like PE, recess. A lot of schools are really advocating to have what we call a home screen, a home there with all the common core words on the playground so that the kids can have that ready and available, or even on the teacher's lanyard. So this is what, you know, because we always have all these terms and that just confuses families sometimes. This is considered low tech because it doesn't have to be charged. It doesn't have any needs. You can just print it and go. And so I have one for travel on my podcast. There's a free download for a travel one this summer that I gave out to families that they could use to help them on their whatever trip they were taking. And so those are perfect to have anywhere your child goes. They can have the same layout. So we want it to be predictable. We won't get into all the nitty gritty, but just saying that, you know, if they go to PE, we don't want a different low tech board and a different layout of where the information is in the visual cards. And you can also have just individual, you know, picture cards. You can make some with Smarty symbol that are easy to use. And those can be some choice cards. Those can be Velcroed to a little board. And those are quick ones that if you're trying to help the child make a choice, or maybe you have different strategies that they could use, they could just grab the one they want. And that's a nice one that they can do too. That's very portable and inexpensive.
Yeah, I normally have, and I'm trying to think, I don't think I have it close by, but yeah, like I have a little, it's a strip. It's about that long, maybe about that wide. That's got Velcro on it that my students would just carry with them from one location to the other. And yeah, it was just very simple directions or very simple common questions that they were going to ask that anybody in the school could understand. And so we've done some myth busting. Do we need to do a little bit more, or can we move into the training for
Those are the main ones. I mean, it's access. It's the fact they will, you know, prevent them from talking. Age limit, that's probably the only other one. We're really finding that the younger, it's not a detriment either. Again, if they're showing signs that they're not able to communicate with people around them, it's causing them frustration, why not introduce this tool that can help them? And I've had 60-year-olds start with a communication device, and he's killing it. So there's never too early, in my opinion, or too late. And I really talked to that mom because she was the only one that can really understand him. And I said, well, you know, you're getting older, he's getting older. What happens if he can't communicate with, you know, his family members or anyone else in his life? That would be really traumatic for him. And so we started introducing it. And that one's my favorite because she was so skeptical. And now she's like, I can't believe how he's just able to talk on this thing. And so that's been really cool to see. So yeah, let's talk about training. Coming back to the IEP, you know, your individual education program, with the schools, you can get training for parents. It can be for parents. It can be and should be for aides, teachers, anybody really interacting, because you're going to see the biggest growth when everyone is rowing right in the same direction. And there's a lot of intricate things about prompting and modeling. And if Shelly's doing it one way for 3 hours a day with the child, and then the aide's doing it a different way, that becomes very confusing, the expectations for the child. So actually, we did training for the high school team because my daughter had been at the middle school for a long time. And we realized that a lot of the team members didn't have a great experience or hadn't had training on it. And so they wanted and were willing, and they wanted to be doing it the right way and to help Hannah. And so we brought in, we did a professional development, and then we saw what that could do. And then we eventually brought in an AAC specialist, and she came in once a month for a couple of months and worked what I call immersion style. Like, not, you know, there's a difference when you go to a PD and professional development and you're being talked to, right?
Right.
And the immersion that I say, this is where like the magic happened, is modeling. She would model with Hannah and do an activity, and then she would have the staff do that. And then towards the end, she was just coming in and observing what they were doing. And then they wanted the feedback. How did we do? What could we do better? Mm-hmm. So those are kind of different styles. There's some trainings that are going to be like, I call like operational, like this is how you turn it on. People are obviously very scared about deleting it and ruining it, right? Because it's very expensive.
Right.
And so taking away that fear, that's going to help them know how to back it up, how to turn it on, how to problem solve it. And then we got Hannah's device through Medicaid, so we had some hours for the family. And what I did differently, because she's had a couple different devices, is this time I had Grandpa get trained on it, and I had made sure my husband was home for some of them, and then Hannah's siblings, because they're communication partners. They need to know how to problem solve. They need to know how to, you know, show her how it works. And so I really encourage families and school teams to go beyond the professional development of operational. And that's usually where a lot of it stops. And that's going to really prevent that integration into the curriculum because, and I can't remember, Shelley, if you did self-contained or resource, we call resource in Arizona where the kids.
I did both.
Yeah, you did both. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, Craig teaches, my husband teaches 7th and 8th. He gets handed curriculum and he gets curriculum training and he's even given a pacing guide, which tells him like, this is what the pacing guide to get through all of this content by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Most people don't realize that there is no special education curriculum. Most of these teachers are either buying it or creating it on their own, usually out of their own pocket. And so if you're already doing that, and you don't have a lot of time. And then I bring in my kiddo, now my daughter, and I'm saying, hey, I also need you to integrate this communication device into the curriculum that you've now created yourself. Mm-hmm. And so that's where they need help. And I tell a lot of families, it's not that they're not willing to do it. They honestly probably don't know how to do it. And they don't want to say that to you. I don't know how to do that because they're supposed to be the experts for special education. Mm-hmm. And we won't get too far in this tangent, but I saw in Florida and in Arizona, they're lowering the standards to start teaching.
Yeah.
As a way to combat teacher shortage. I don't agree with that's the way to solve it. But
I've been doing that in Illinois for a couple of years. They've gone from you needed a bachelor's degree to an associate's degree to my husband has a bachelor's degree, but his bachelor's degree is in organizational leadership. And he's been in the IT world for 20 years, the business world. And last year he did some paperwork and he jumped through some hoops and he did some things. And now he's certified to teach business only at the high school level. But he's now a teacher. And I'm like, okay, that doesn't seem right because I had to go through a whole lot more.
Yeah. So in Arizona, basically, you can start teaching before you're done with your bachelor's. And then you have so many years to complete it. But again, what I want families to understand is you may have a person teaching simultaneously actually finishing their teaching degree. So they haven't necessarily been taught accommodations, how to modify things, classroom management, these other things, or have ever written an IEP or even know what it is. That is the kinds of things that we are facing as families and as advocates and coaches out there is realizing that some people in the classroom don't have the basic, even the very low level of introduction to special education. And now we have even less. So really understanding that that's a section on the IEP, you can ask for it. And under equipment, my daughter's AAC device is there. Now it does say, some of the times it says provided by the school, provided by family. So for mine, because we provided it through our, you know, her insurance, it says, parents, but I have a clarifying statement, which is my favorite thing on the IEP, is that if Hannah's device was to ever be broken, not brought to school, they are required to provide her with a similar. So it doesn't have to be the same. That's very important because, again, like I said, there's all these different apps and devices. And so to our school to have every single variation is unrealistic. So what we said is a similar device or low tech board that has a similar layout to the one that she's used to using. So that's a pretty good phrase. So that way they do break screens do crack, and there needs to be some sort of alternative. So that's really important. So supplemental aids and support is a really great place for that.
Yeah. And one of the things, and I don't think you mentioned it. If you did, I apologize that it didn't register with me, but a lot of the, like, if they're buying an actual, like you said, your daughter has the actual device.
Yeah.
Versus like, it's going to be an app on an iPad or some sort of tablet. A lot of the companies will provide the training. You just have to ask them.
And yep.
A lot of them do it at no charge because they know how expensive the device itself is. And so they'll come out and they'll give training.
Yeah.
And if you are wanting to trial different devices, companies have that, or at least they used to when I was teaching. I presume they still offer that you can trial devices for some amount of time, 2 weeks, a month. I don't know what all the different, you would have to talk with the company. Now, I remember I had one student and he had a Dynavox VMAX, mm-hmm. I think is what he used. We had the company come out and then they were basically on my speed dial because I was the one being the special ed teacher who was like, okay, I got the training. I think mom and dad got training. And I think that was pretty much it. And then we had to disseminate the information to everybody else. And so if something didn't work right, then it was put on my shoulders to figure out how to, you know, undelete something you know, get the programming in there. And those separate devices, at least at that time, and this was 15 years ago, probably at this point, that there was a lot of stuff that it could have done. And we intentionally, I say we, his parents, because their insurance paid for it. The intention was to get the device to be able to grow.
Yes.
You know, so like we did have to start off with, and he did have a switch and then he was able to, you know, sometimes use his fingers because he had spastic muscles as well. And, you know, it was a lot of trial and error, like figuring out, okay, is it like, do we need to do the head switch? Do we need to do an elbow switch? Do we need to do a switch in front of him, you know, can we move to this? And then it was like, how many choices? Because at first when we just started, I think he only had two choices on his screen until we were clear that, you know, he could access and, you know, consistently give us what we needed from him then. And a myth that we haven't touched on is that because someone is nonverbal, they don't have anything to say and they're non-intelligent.
Right. It's a total, that is one of the reasons why I did a poll a couple months ago, I think, on Instagram. And I was like, how many children who are non-speaking do you think are taught to read? And the truth is that over 53% are not taught literacy. And I think, and I know, in my opinion, the reason why is if the people teaching don't believe they're capable, then they don't usually provide them those opportunities. And I know an adult AAC user who said, one of the reasons I'm struggling in college so bad is because nobody believed that it was important to teach me to write. So nobody taught her how to write grammatically correct paper. They didn't teach her paragraph structure and all that. And so they do have a lot to say, and usually they're being limited by the people around them on what they, you know, what options they have and whatnot. And so there's tons of tech support from all the different companies. So there's a tech support number you can call. And I am always flabbergasted at how they can help me without seeing it. Cause I'm such a person, like, I need to see it, but maybe they've seen it enough.
Yeah, me too.
So they can help you walk through it. They've helped me, my daughter's app was frozen. Like, you know, we call that the circle of death. You know, you just wouldn't do anything. I couldn't get anywhere. They helped me unstuck it and get it back loaded. They are motivated. The companies are motivated to come and have and do those trainings too, because they want you to love. It's fine. It's absolutely free. Like, do it. but they want you to love their product so that you want to promote their product and say, hey, I've had two kids use this. This has been really well. Let's give it a go. I've had a good experience with them. So they do come out and do a lot of the trainings. They have learning libraries on their website. And sometimes they'll even give you the teacher and the parent access to like creating pages. So you can create pages for the device on your computer and then you save it and you can like upload it to the device. So there's all these really great things that you can do to make your life a lot easier. And a lot of times if you can show you're one of the providers, they'll give you some sort of access. It's not necessarily the full blown one. Sometimes it's access from your computer, but that way you can at least practice knowing where the buttons are, do Word Finder. That's my favorite feature. All the devices have Word Finder and you literally like, I don't know where this word is. You type it in. And if it's on the device, wherever it's at, all these pages, it will find it and tell you where that is. So that's super helpful.
That's awesome. I don't think that ours that I was using had that, or if it did, I certainly never used that option. But I'm glad that you mentioned the limiting factor.
Yeah.
That, you know, because it is, and I believe we talked about this the first time you were on too, is the fact that that student's parents didn't really want to use the device at home because they could understand him and they could know what he wanted. And I appreciated that. But at the same time, I thought, but even though you know, or you think you know, what if you're wrong occasionally?
Right.
And what if, you know, they do want to tell you in their own words versus you assuming you know, or you know, doing whatever it is that you do to figure out what the person is saying. And yeah, by the time we had the device, I guess, for 2 or 3 years, and yeah, he was reading sentences and he was putting sentences together, and he had way more than two options on the screen, you know, by that point. And he had, like you said, several pages, like, okay, you know, he knew to go to this page, to go to that, to get this, to do this, blah, blah, blah. And I did, I was a little sad. Well, I was more than a little sad that his parents didn't see the value of it outside of the school system, you know,
yeah.
Because he had siblings as well. And, you know, yeah. They could have had probably much deeper conversations with him because he has the most amazing sense of humor. And
yeah.
He loved, like your student, he loved to put his own jokes in and, you know, go around and then tell jokes to kids in the school. And we always had, there was one in particular I remember that, and his story's in the book. And he liked to make I think it was the burping noise or the farting noise when, you know, because he was in junior high. So that was, you know. So yeah, he'd just like go around and we'd be going down the hall somewhere and all of a sudden he'd just make the noise and then he would crack up laughing. So we had to teach him when it was appropriate to do that stuff.
Right. Well, that's a good thing. That's a great thing to say. This is the time we can have jokes and this is the time maybe when any student shouldn't be doing the farting noise. And that really leads to that modeling and modeling at home. Even when we think we understand, I can model and say, did mama get it right? Is that what you wanted? And then sometimes she hits no. And then she'll go and tell me, like, I was saying brush teeth, but she also wanted to get on her PJs. And so she said, no, PJs. So I was like, oh, okay. And you want to get on, you can do that first or whatever. So that modeling and understanding that modeling without expectation, you do not have to do hand over hand to get them to learn. By seeing it and hearing it, and seeing you do it, they're actually learning very, very well where it is. And it takes like 100 repetitions of hearing it, seeing it for it to stick, just like with a lot of other motor plans that we think. And I relate this to families. If you were to mess with your phone and move your icons, you would mess yourself up. You'd be like, my Facebook app is not on the upper right-hand corner, second from the top.
Exactly.
And so we have learned a motor plan of where our apps are, our email, whatever's on our phone. That's similar to a communication device. And so by seeing you model, eat cracker, eat grapes, they're learning where the motor plan and where to go for that. And so at home, school, that's where that really that teamwork comes into play. Because if a student only goes to speech twice a week, and that's the only place they're getting taught the device, it's around about 84 years for them to have similar language to a two-year-old. And so we don't want to take 84 years. We don't have that kind of time. So getting, you know, and my dad is doing it, and he's learning, and he now knows what to do if the app is sometimes closes out. And so he didn't know how to bring it back from the field of choices. He's learned how to model snack. And we even created, my dad always brings, he comes on Thursdays. The kids love Thursdays, like their favorite day of the week. Brings his blue bag, and he, here in Arizona, it's always hot. So it's a blue cooler bag. And Hannah clearly wanted to know what was in the blue cooler bag every week, because she was, you know, sometimes it's cookies, sometimes it's healthy stuff, but most of the time it's cookies and treats. And so we added what's in the blue bag. And so now when she goes in kind of trying to get the bag, my dad will hit, what's in the blue bag? And then they'll find the items together. But that was an easy way to get my dad, Papa, you know, modeling, knowing where something was, and a model opportunity on Thursdays that he's comfortable with, and he got comfortable by doing it, you know, and by doing it. So, yeah, so there's so many things. I do want to share on my website, there is a visual communication toolkit. It's a free resource for families. You can go there and download. It's 10 pages. It has a couple of videos. So if you're like, I want to learn more about this. What are some different device options? What does that look like at home? That toolkit walks you all the way through it. And then there is a parent-to-parent course that teaches parents how to feel empowered about, you know, AAC and visual communication. There I am. And so it's a self-paced course where they can go through and really learn about AAC. And then because I'm a coach and all that, I even gave you some PDF downloads that can help you start that conversation with your school team. So, and there's Hannah.
Yeah. And there's her device right there.
Yeah, there it is.
So is this the quiz that you were just talking about?
Yeah, well, I can get you the link. Maybe we can put it in the notes below. I know on Instagram, it says visual communication toolkit, and it takes them to like their own little resource on there. So
it might be, yeah, it might be on one of these. And so what is this IEP live podcast?
Yeah, that's our podcast. So,
sorry, squirrel. I do that. I like totally different topic.
And that's kind of a cool play on words because it's including every parent. So our podcast is really about helping all parents feel really confident about how to be a good ally and how to collaborate with other families who are raising kids with disabilities, and how to be an ally for someone else that maybe your child doesn't have a disability, but you believe they should have an inclusive playground. So you want them to do it. I'm looking it up right now. How to get, sorry guys, I was traveling yesterday. I could have probably had this up for Shelly, but I'll send it to her. Okay. It's Courtney Burnett, and I believe it goes to resources or something like that. I was trying to figure out.
It might be, I'm right just kind here of moving around on your, oh, can't go to my library.
But I'll send it to you. Actually,
right courses, here. Ebooks, Communication Club.
See, it didn't copy a course because I'm trying to do it on here.
That's okay. Yeah, I'm just kind of action workbook. Cool.
Yeah, so I have lots of resources on there. There's the ebook about basically how to help your child understand their IEP better and ways you can keep track of stuff. I just sent it through Instagram, actually, the actual link. And so, yeah, it's CourtneyBurnett.com/ visual communication toolkit, and it will take you right to that page on there. So okay, it's like a landing page. Our parents don't need me to get technical, but it's one that takes you right to it. So I think
awesome.
The quiz also takes you there. if you fill it out, that was to try to help you if, like, if you were ready for IEP and AAC or maybe just the visual communication. So that's there, but that is the web page. I can actually type it in here for you.
And did you tell them where they can find your podcast?
Yeah, so Apple and Spotify have it, and it's IEP Live is the name of it. And I do have that on the top of my website, so you can click there too, and it will take you over there. We have 3 episodes right now, and we do it every other week, so they'll get some there too.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, I like to see how many of the IEP coaches are doing podcasts now. And eventually, those of you who have been with me since the beginning, you know, you've known that this is a video podcast, or as my daughter corrects me every time I say that, it is a live stream. She is helping me figure it out how to get it turned into an actual podcast. And so then you'll have options. You can download it and listen to it as a podcast, or you'll be able to, you know, continue to watch it as a live stream, or, you know, maybe watch it at the live stream and then listen to it again in a podcast form. You know, just whatever works for you. So what I am doing now is I see that you sent that to me. So I am, hear all the clicking that I'm doing. I'm going to put that up really quick. At least I think I am. And then where to go?
Shelly's just streaming faster now. 97 episodes later, she's a StreamYard master. So right there, and under Instagram and Facebook and even TikTok, I'm trying it out. It's Courtney Burnett Advocate, and that is my social media handle. I'm very active in stories and giving tips and sharing just like about my life, the ups and downs, and just helping. I touch on other things that I don't necessarily offer formal services on, but how to navigate insurance, prescription delays. I've helped a couple families get medical beds, sleep safe beds, actually, paid for by their insurance. Because those beds are expensive. They're about $7,000. So, yeah. So yeah, I've had a couple of success stories, and I'm like, yay. So it like worked for me. And I'm like, well, this is what I did. And now I've helped 2 other families that I know of. And I actually typed up the steps for my daughter's doctor, her PCP. And so she goes, okay, this is what one of my moms did. And it's gotten all these families their beds. If you follow this kind of in a weird way, this prescription, and it's just ridiculous how many hoops we have. And that's why the No Limits and these other podcasts and other resources are so helpful, because parents have more than one thing on their plate. And the IEP is one part. They have case management and doctors and all these other things and insurance going on too. So we need to stick together and give them all the help they can get so that they can have a fun and happy and an enjoyable life and be able to do these non-enjoyable parts. I love my daughter. My daughter is super fun. It's navigating all the systems of care that are very complicated that bring me frustration. And so my goal in all of my services that I offer is to really help families feel less stress around those things so that they can spend more time enjoying their kids, because that's what we all want. We want to enjoy our kids, know that they're preparing for the future just like any other child. And we are no different. You know, parents raising kids with disabilities want the same things that other parents want, only the road there is full of potholes and unexpected plot twists. And so that kind of sucks away some of the joy. And I really want parents to feel joy in raising their kids and not feel so much frustration. It really comes from this, I call it the systems of care, because those are what bring down the enjoyment factor, not our kids. So.
Right. Yeah. And I have a friend who her husband has recently become disabled, and she's more stressed out about exactly what you said. You know, yes, his disability is a big deal, but it's all getting all the medicine, getting all the prescriptions, getting him in the right facility to help take care of him, getting him the services that he needs while he's in the facility, getting their finances. I mean, it's just like one after the other, after the other, and it just doesn't stop. And yeah. And so I want to talk because yes, that is most definitely the downside and the biggest downside, but I want to talk about a little bit here. We've got a few minutes to go before we need to wrap up, but you do some of the most exciting and fun things with your family, and Hannah is enjoying them with you. So like, you went whitewater rafting this past summer. And I mean, you know, you've talked about Hannah a little bit. So, you know, the audience knows that, that, you know, and they've seen some pictures that she's usually in a wheelchair and that she isn't, you know, able to communicate like you and I are communicating right now. And, you know, there's some other things going on. And so I think oftentimes maybe families in your situation or families looking at your situation would go, no, you can't go whitewater rafting. You can't go horseback riding. You can't go, I don't know, whatever all else you've been doing lately. But I mean, I'm loving watching your adventures as the summer has progressed. So just talk about some of those things. And I know they're not easy, but like talk about how they managed to happen and what you had to do.
Yeah, I got so many DMs. What? Hannah went whitewater rafting? Are you crazy? So yeah, so my daughter is in a wheelchair. She actually does not walk independently. So she can walk holding on to us. She can walk with her gait trainer, which is a kind of like a walker, but it has a seat for her to sit on when she becomes tired. So that's available. But getting down to the... First of all, my husband researched the company and found a company that was super well rated in Colorado. And he told them about our daughter and they said, we would love to have her. And so it was whitewater rafting. I do want to assure people what there's different levels of whitewater rafting. And this was like level, I think, up to three. So there's like, I think six. So it had some moments, but it's not like the pictures where you're like, you know, water. It wasn't like that. But they had to help us get her down to the river entrance, which was not wheelchair accessible whatsoever. What I thought was super cool is other families, we each had our own boat, but we were going in a group, and other family members were helping us pull and tug and drag the wheelchair. And Hannah was laughing the whole time. She thinks if it's bumpy or a little bit dangerous, she actually thinks it's quite funny. And then we had to wear their life jacket and a helmet. And at first, Hannah was not sure about the helmet, but I told her everybody had to wear the helmet. She had to wear the helmet. So eventually she left it alone. We put on the half like water suit, right? That keeps you from getting super cold. So we put on the adaptive, I call it adaptive because it's like half. So I didn't have to get all the arms, right? It was like, like this. And then we got her in the boat. They had, of course, we couldn't buckle her to the boat because if the boat did, worst case scenario, flip, she can't be buckled. So they put in like, you know, you go to the concerts and they have the little chairs that you sit on that kind of give you back support, but it has no buckle on it. So they had that, and then they tethered that to the actual raft, the chair.
Oh, okay.
And then they put in this little floaty thing behind the chair to keep it up. And I had brought my own life jacket that we normally use for Hannah, but I was informed that State Colorado has their own regulations for the life jacket. But our rafting guide, Kat, was like, what do you think this could be useful in some other way? And I said, could we tether the life vest that I bought to make like armrests for Hannah so she could kind of lean on the outside of the boat and then I was on the inside and so Hannah could put her arm up on it? And she was absolutely. So we tethered that there, and that was pretty genius because when we hit the rapids, Hannah had something to kind of bump up. Hannah loved it. I mean, the picture when we weren't hitting the rapids, she's kind of looks like you're not sure if she was having the time of her life. But when we hit the rapids, I still had a paddle. So I was paddling and making sure Hannah stayed in the boat, and Kat was making sure Hannah stayed in the boat. And then they had Craig up front doing normally Hannah should have been paddling too. Everybody in the boat paddles. Hannah's and his. So he needed to be up there with the muscle. So we've done that. We've done a lot of different adventures with her. And if there's a way for her to participate, Craig and I are like, we're going to try it and we're going to do it. I do have to admit, I almost chickened out after they did all of the safety things that could go wrong in the raft. I said, maybe Hannah and I should stay back. And he goes, no, it's totally safe. They just have to read that. And I was like, and Kat's like, I wouldn't take her out if I didn't believe she was capable of doing it. So we did, and she had a fun time. My favorite part of that, though, was the attitude of the staff was, she's welcome here. This is the way it should be, but it's not always the way it is. Right. She's welcome here. We want her here. From Kat to the other staff helping us get her down to the river, to the bus driver who apparently used to be a caregiver. So handling wheelchairs was no problem for him. And he put it wasn't an adaptive bus either. He put the whole wheelchair into a bus seat. And then Hannah, with the help of Craig and I, my husband and I she stepped her way up and then we got her down and her wheelchair was waiting for her. But when we got back from that trip though, I emailed all the physical therapists that I had contact for. And I said, I get choked up about that. You helped make this moment possible because we've been working on stair stepping, bouncing for a few seconds, sitting up, crawling, all these things that did lead to a moment outside of school, outside of the therapy room, where Hannah was able to use her skills that she learned in therapy to do life, to do adventure. And so I really am encouraging families to look at, are your IEP goals preparing you for not just the classroom, but outside the classroom and the adventures and what kind of life your child wants to lead? And yeah, she's been to the Seven Pools of Heaven in Hawaii, not wheelchair accessible at all. And again, strangers saw us making it happen, and they saw how tired we were. Going down's always easy. It's like, okay, we're going down. Going up is usually where the really sets in. And so my sister was with us, my husband and myself, and we kept going. And I swear to you, special ed teachers in the wild, they always come out of the woods. Can I help you? Can I help you get her back up? So cool. You brought her down here. And so we just tried to look at her needs. We drove to Colorado. If we fly, we're planning to take her to Costa Rica and in March. And my husband's done the research. And so we picked certain flights that would best work for changing her because she is still in Pampers. And so changing her, how long she's on the flight, look at your child's needs there too, and then planning it out. So we take those into consideration. And actually, at the beginning of July, our podcast episode was traveling with your child that has a disability. So you guys can check that out too.
So. Yeah, I was just thinking maybe I need to have you on again so you can just like talk about all your travels and all the, you know, helping families figure all of that kind of stuff out.
Yeah.
You have your own. And since you just directed them there, then I'll just.
Yeah. But we can do another one. That was just tip of the iceberg. But I've been begging my husband to actually, I don't want to take credit. He does the research. And then he asked me, what do you think about this? Or do you think, what about this flight? And then we discuss it. But Craig is absolutely, I've been begging him to come be a travel agent for other families because he'll research adaptive hikes and trails and different things. And then he actually has them in a Google Doc and he's type A like. So he plans them all out. So it does take a little bit of planning to make it the most successful with the least amount of hurdles once you're there. But it is possible, and that's one way that we, as a family, that's something that travel and making memories that way with our kids is super important, and making sure that we find the joy and have the joy outside of the things that aren't that joyful, and that's one way we've done it to where we're really making memories and as a family, and that she's really included. I've inspired other families I know of that didn't take trips. And then when they saw us doing it, they're like, maybe we can. And I showed them how we look at hospitals, what kind of services are around, and then you make that decision. Okay, is that, does the safety requirements there, if that's something that's your child needs, what can we bring with us? Our doctors have always been really good about prescribing reasonable things that they might need when we're away, so that we had that when we went to Hawaii, because sometimes airplanes make Hannah sick, as far as, I don't know, catching, you know, how it is in the airplane. And so we went with an emergency pack of medication that we could use if we needed it, so that we would know if Hannah started to get congested or whatever. So talk with your doctor, because they want them to have fun too.
That is so cool. And that's an absolute great example of hashtag no limits. I think oftentimes families do limit themselves, you know, because they don't think it's going to be possible. And yeah, you have just proven multiple trips are possible. And
yeah,
and yes, you know, it does take some effort. It does take some research. It does take some accommodating, but it most definitely is possible.
Yeah,
that's absolutely so awesome. Like I said, I've loved watching all of your adventures, especially this past summer. The whitewater rafting is, I'm not a swimmer, so I'm like, I kind of want to, but like I would be, you know, on the like,
you just have to go to your back and float. That's the most important thing.
Actually,
my teenager was, when I was starting to kind of, I was like, I don't know if we should do this. And Lily said, well, actually, the number one rule in rafting is to sit down and not stand up. And she's like, well, Hannah will already be sitting.
The number one rule down.
She found, you know, well, that's true. So
there you go.
So there's just those things. And, you know, you have to weigh the risk for yourself and your family. Right. But I do think it's possible. You can talk to the different people who and I will try to get to you somebody else I think you should have on here. He is on Instagram. I can't think of the handle right now. But he videos his adventures in his wheelchair, and he takes his caregiver with him all over the world. So I'll find
him. Awesome.
Because he also is very inspiring on things you can ask for and how to pre-plan your trip and make sure your hotel is as accessible as the website says, or what does accessible mean in this country versus what does accessible mean in another country.
That's a good point.
To you, because he's a really cool person to watch and see what's going on there too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have to end.
I know.
We need to wrap up, but you know, hopefully I get to see you in person in a few months, and then we can just catch up offline and talk about all these wonderful things that you're doing. And
sure.
I very much appreciate you coming back on, and hopefully 2 more years, I'll still be here, and we can do every 2 years as Courtney.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me. And of course, if they have any questions, they can find me on social media, email me, whatever. I'm happy to put them in the right direction or give a tip. So again, thank you for having me on.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.